Disappearance Day of Srila Lochan Das Thakur, who composed this song. Dekho ore bhai tribhubane nai emona doyala data. Just see, within all the three worlds there is not such a bestower of mercy. So, chaitanya daya kata karoha bicha, bicha karile chitte pabe chamatka. This connects with that. Oh yeah, if you can do parallel, that's good. Namo maha vadanyaya. Krishna prema pradayate. Chaitanya daya kata. Namo maha vadanyaya. So these songs are not just some imaginative composition, but they're based on proper understanding, authoritative understanding. As, yeah, based on this. Chaitanya daya kata. Karoha bicha, bicha karile chitte pabe, chitta pabe chamatka. Just consider the mercy of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and if you do, your whole consciousness will be astonished. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Agyana Timirandhasya Gyananjana Shalakaya. Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. Nama Shreshtam Manamapi Shachiputra Matra Sarupam. Rupam Tasyagrajam Urupuring Maturim Goshtabatim. Radha kundam girivaramaho radhika madhava sham prapto yasya pratita kripaya shrikuram tam natosmi. Vandeham shrikuru shriyatav padakamalam shrikurun vaishnavangscha shri rupam sagrajatam sahagana raghunatan vitam tam sajivam Sadvaitam Savadhutam Purajana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Sri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Sri Vishakhan Vitamscha. Continuing commentary on Sri Vishnu Sahasranama, by which we can understand the glory of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. We can understand His Aishvarya. Aishvarya means that by which He is Ishvara. How does He control? Generally that's considered to be by His power and majesty. So the names in Vishnu Sahasranam, they are Vishnu Sahasranam, not Krishna Sahasranam. They are describing His power and majesty, or they are generally described to be like that. We don't find names here like Radhanath, Gopi Puranadhana, Kunja Bihari. So after we've been through Vishnu Sahasranam, first we should see how He is Vishnu in at least 1,000 ways. Of course, and in unlimited ways He is the Supreme Lord. But for us tiny little jivas, 1,000 ways at least we should examine how He is Vishnu. Then we will see how He is Kunja Bihari, if we are so fortunate to be blessed to understand how he is Kunja Bihari. That Vishnu, who is all-pervading, who is everywhere, he's hidden himself away. He's hiding away from everyone. He sees everything. He's everywhere. But he's hiding himself away in a kunja. Kunja means a forest bower. Do you have that word in Tamil, kunja? You must have some word like that. There are no forests left, hardly. But yes, still there are some in Tamil Nadu. So a kunja means a natural opening or some area in the thick forest. There's some area which is naturally open. Of course, by natural, that means by the arrangement of the material energy. In Vrindavan, natural means by the arrangement of the spiritual energy, yoga maya. Actually, Balaram is the... Between Balaram makes the scenery and yoga maya directs the activity. Right? Balaram makes the set for the drama and yoga maya is the director. So Balaram makes the scenery where there are little groves here and there in the forest. And forest is very thick, so and deep, and extends for a long distance. So it's very easy to get lost in the forest. But those who know the paths, they can find their way to some secret grove. Called secret because not everyone knows how to get there. But Krishna, he's always wandering in the forest with the cows. So he knows all the paths in and out of the forest. The paths are there in the forest. Have you seen? Probably not. Yeah. All from cities. But if you go off to some forest area, you'll see there are paths. And you may wonder, how are there paths? Because no humans come. But animals also. The animals, by running, they also make forest paths. They go. They have their set routes through where the opening in the trees are a little bit wide, so the animals can go. So the animals make paths also. Maybe just very just suitable for an animal. So maybe a human can't even go there because the bushes are just a little bit high. The animals can go, but the humans can't. So it really requires great navigation skills to find the kunja. Therefore, it's, of course, Krishna, he knows everything can go anywhere, but playing like a human being, it's a secret. And only a few know that secret. So they also have a secret rendezvous at night with certain gopi or gopis. So it's all very secret, which makes it all the more fun. That is not in Vishnu Sahasranam, that's all. It's not for Vishnu Sahasranam. Then, it's very deep and thick in the forest, so, and it's very secret, so they can do whatever they like there. That's why we don't discuss it. Because they do whatever they like, and it's not discussable, especially if we're reading Vishnu Sahasranam. It's definitely not discussable. So they can shout as much as they like, they can laugh as loud as they like, and it's a long distance away from anyone, so no one will know. And the trees, they're also, they block the sound, and they make a nice atmosphere. In the summer it's very cool, in the winter it remains warm if you're in a forest. So the trees, you may think, and the trees are also, they're also kalpa vrikshas, so, you know, whatever you want. You don't expect in a forest to have all facilities, but in Krishna's forest, there are all facilities everywhere. Whatever you want. Fruit of all varieties, drinks of all varieties, spices, whatever. So we shouldn't think that the trees in Vrindavan, they're simply some Shanta ras and just boring trees, but they're intimately serving the pastimes of Radha and Krishna, and they have access to that, which is more than most could dream of. So the Also, this name, actually Vishnu Sahasranama names, they can also be understood in terms of Krishna's pastimes. That Vishva, the first name, as far as the Vrindavan Vasis are concerned, the world begins and ends at there's no Mathura, that's out of the world, it doesn't exist. Krishna could not have gone to Mathura. What is that? It's some bad dream. There is no Mathura. This is the world. It's just like for people who live in a village before buses and all this kind of thing. That is the world, their little world. So Vrindavan's a very little world compared, but actually that is the world. That is all in all. And anything outside that is just not worth considering. And Vishnu, he's all pervading. I spoke about how Vishnu is a name known and used in Vrindavan also. Then, what is that? Bhuta Bhavya Bhavat Prabhu. The Supreme Lord, in all phases of time, past, present, and future, indicates that Krishna's pastimes, they continue, past, present, and future. What is past, present, and future? It's a cycle. Cycle means that what will happen in future has already happened in the past. There's srishti, sthiti, pralaya. Creation, maintenance, destruction. So it's all quite predictable in some ways. It's just, it goes round, and so Krishna's pastimes, they go in a circle. That he's born, he grows up, he performs various pastimes. Some people say he goes to Mathura and then Dwarka and then he passes away and then it goes on. Or, according to one version, it merges. That's how that Krishna apparently leaves Vrindavan and the inhabitants of Vrindavan merged in. Well, it starts off that Nanda and Yashoda, they have no child. And then they have a child and everyone's happy. And then he leaves and then they're unhappy. And they think, when is he coming back? When is he coming back? He's gone. But they can't really believe he's gone. And then it comes back in their mind, Nanda and Yashoda, they have no child. And then they have a child. And then it continues like this. I think Sanatan Goswami described like that. Although everyone else describes that he actually went and had different pastimes. Like that. It's like, so Bhuta Bhavya Bhavat Prabhu. He is the Lord. Oh, there's one important point about Vishnu that I didn't see. There are so many things. Did you bring that file you're going to give me? No. There are so many points. That when it's said that he's all-pervading, that's also said about the Akash is all-pervading in the universe. The ether is also all-pervading. But Krishna's all-pervadingness is not the same. It's more subtle. Krishna's even within the ether, which is unimaginable to us. So, going on to the next few names after. The next few names after Bhuta Bhavya Bhavat Prabhu describe how Krishna is the master in all phases of work. How he exercises his, or how he is the master of all that be. So the next few names describe that. Bhutakrit, Bhutabrit, Bhava, Bhutatma, Bhutabhavanaha. Yeah. So these names, they all except one of them begin with the term Bhuta. And the name before that, Bhuta, Bhavya Bhavat Prabhuhu. But in Bhuta Bhavya Bhavat Prabhuhu, Bhuta here means in the past. Whereas in the names that follow, Bhuta generally means clear meaning, or the first meaning that will come to mind, means the living beings or all that exists. These are two. It can also mean, of course, very well known, it means ghost. So I know one devotee, he was given the in Bombay, he was given the name Bhuta something, Bhuta Krit or something like that. There he was just calling him Bhut, he didn't like Dasha Chakra, what's that? Dasha Chakra, Bhagawan Hoilo Bhut, something like that. That's a story. And we got too much off on a story. So now here I have here a copy of Sri Vishnu Sahasranam with Shankara's commentary. Better not to read it. I don't know, Shankara, yeah, the meanings he's given, but how he explains is not always in accord with Vaishnav Siddhanta. Can be very dangerous. So I won't read what he says. Otherwise, we may get confused. Well, we can say, just to show how he has directly propagated the rascaldom which is rejected by Krishna in Bhagavad Gita. Bhutakrit, the creator and destroyer of all existences in the universe. Okay, very good. Then, assuming Rajoguna, he as Brahma is generator of all objects. Okay. Reject it. The definition is quite acceptable, but his explanation of it is not. So, the next one is all right. Krit. Krit means, it can mean that which is already done, or can be understood to mean the cause of doing, like karta. Krit. Krita kritya. The work is done. One is satisfied because the work is done. So, here Shankara also says, krit can also be understood to mean krintana, or destruction. Then it can also refer to rudra in that case. So that's acceptable. But not that he assumes Rajaguna. There's a misunderstanding there. So he is the creator. He is understood to be the maker, even though there's no real making. And this is another mystery, which for people who are raised on modern science as it has arisen in the Western world, they have a lot of difficulty in understanding all these things, because Krishna, we say is the source of everything, but he's not the creator in the sense that we generally understand. Because the jivas, he is the origin of all the jivas. But it doesn't mean that he sat down one day and made them all. Or that he even took him 6 days to do it, and then he got exhausted and had to take rest. It doesn't mean that. The jivas are also eternally existing. Amai vangsho jiva loke jiva bhuta, the word bhuta comes there, sanatanaha. The living beings are eternally part and parcel, Srila Prabhupada translated like that, of Krishna. They're his eternal angsha. So they're not created in the sense of, well, in Christian mythology, they call it theology, but better to call it mythology. There is creation ex nihilo. There's nothing, and then there's everything. So that's one kind of creation, according to their idea. Another idea of creation, that which follows the Vedic understanding, sarga and visarga. Sarga means the original creation, or that by which the basic ingredients are manifested. Manifestation is a better term rather than creation. And then visarga means organization or creation. Just like the materials for building the temple, we can see, are placed here. So they have been manifested in this form by the combined efforts of a bunch of laborers and a trucking company and a few others also. So the ingredients are manifest, and then to shape them into a functional building, that is another form of manifestation. So sarga means the manifestation of the basic ingredients plus the intelligence to do everything, and visarga is the engineering job. So there are two different understandings of the word creation, but this it's a linguistic problem. When we say creation, the English language term creation doesn't exactly fit with the terms that we have in the Vedic understanding. So we have to be very careful. I mean, it's a big, in Christianity, at least the Christianity, the branch of Christianity which I was raised in, and I believe it is in, I don't know about in Orthodox Christianity, you don't know either, because you're from Croatia, not Serbia. You might know. Are you from an Orthodox background? Yeah. So in Catholicism and Protestantism, I think even more in Protestantism, it's like a big thing emphasizing that God is the creator. You're from Muslim background. Anyway, whatever. So is it in Orthodox Christianity also? It's like the big thing about being God is that he's the creator of the world. That's it. Like, you know, this whole world is like one toilet for people with dysentery. They, you know, God made the world, all things bright and beautiful, all creatures great and small, all things wise and wonderful, the good Lord made them all. So we are told. So that we can enjoy eating our beef because God made it, right? He made the animals for us to torture and kill them. Whoops, sorry, someone's leaving in disappointment. Well, sorry. So creation, it's rather manifestation. He has brought them forth. He brings them forth. So what's that? Sa'aikshata, he saw. And then what's that? What comes after that? In the Upanishad, say by his glance, he manifests them. Drishtipat, that's called. By his glance, he manifests the living beings. Oh, let's see what Parashar Bhatt has to say about this. Yeah. Oh, there's an important point he makes. That he creates all things without depending on anything else. So that's an important point. Just like I was saying, how the materials have come here by the joint effort of laborers and a trucking company, but actually there are so many factors involved to bring all the materials here. So many different factors. I mean, first of all, you have to find out where to get the materials from, and then you have to have a geologist to see if this kind of earth is suitable for building. So many persons are involved. And the architect and the contractor and the engineer, they're all involved in the shaping the materials into a building. So they're dependent upon getting the materials from others, and they also have to learn from others how to execute their professions, and they also they're dependent on so many factors, like they have to come here from somewhere else, or they have to depend on a public transport system or roads, and they have to depend upon light so they can see what they're doing. They have to depend on their bodies to function properly. They're dependent in so many ways. So if someone says, "I have created something," it's when in so many ways they're dependent, it's a wrong statement. Whereas Krishna, he is independent, Swarat. Independent in all respects. He doesn't depend upon anyone or anything. Everything is dependent upon him. So the whole idea that we shall be independent is very much promoted in the Western world. It's just absolutely ridiculous. It's the height of absurdity to say that we shall be independent. Even if we talk about independent thinking, what is that? First you have to be trained in so many branches of knowledge and processes of thinking. Then there's the question of independent thinking. Just like to play extemporaneously on an instrument. What's that called? Ad-libbing? Where someone plays a solo and they just... But you have to study so much under discipline, the science of music, how to play an instrument, and learn all how to do all the techniques in a proper way. Then there comes the question. Then there's a possibility of someone doing creative music. What's the term for that? I just can't remember. They just play, and it's they're not going according to any script. So, and especially if you're doing that, it's not a complete, especially if you're doing with other people playing with you, then there has to be a very good understanding between them all. And so even the independence, we're dependent. Even the independent musician who does play that extemporaneous solo, he's also dependent upon the very laws of music, which are all highly mathematical. It's all set up by Krishna. And if he's playing with other, and he's dependent on the instrument. And in so many ways, everyone is dependent. But Krishna is independent. He brings everything into being by himself. But he does. You say, how can he bring everything into being? Because everything is eternal. So when we say creation, it means not exactly Christian in the Christian sense, but everything is dependent upon him. Everything exists by his will. It is like that because he wants that. And it's always been like that. Not that he was ever lacking in anything and then he thought, oh, now I need something. Although it's mentioned like that. it's stated like that. But actually everything is always existing. So these terms, even to enter into the understanding of them, it requires to give up our limited way of thinking, in which we think in terms of past, present and future. Now we are sitting in Salem. 1 week ago I was somewhere else. 2 weeks ago I was somewhere else. In 1 week I will be somewhere else. Now I am so many years old. 20 years earlier I was the present age minus 20 years old. And at that time my body looked younger. In 20 years time, good chance I won't be in this body at all. So everything is subject to change in this. Now we're getting off on a different subject, but see, they're all interrelated. So in this material world, time causes change, which means deterioration. There are periods of apparent progress or development, but it comes to a peak and then there's deterioration. And even they merge into each other, just like the young person's body appears to be developing, but at the same time it's developing itself, the deterioration also starts. You don't even notice it. First notice it, I've noticed it around the age of 30. I thought, whoops. Things are going, deterioration has started. They actually started before that. But time is Krishna that will come up in Vishnu Sahasranam. One of the names is Kala, which manifests change not for deterioration, but simply for ecstasy, ecstatic pastimes. So he makes the living beings. They are born, he affects that. He brings them into being. They're eternally existing, but the different bodies they get, Maya dhakshena prakriti hi suyate sacharacharam hetanana kantaya jagat viparivartate. He oversees that, actually not even directly, through his material energy. He brings them into being. Another meaning is that as the Karnadakshai Vishnu, they're all the living beings in the material worlds, they all merge into him. Living beings, and also here bhuta, that can mean pancha bhuta, the gross material elements, they all merge into him and he brings them forth again. So in this way he's bhutakrit. He appears to be creation, but actually it's manifestation. He brings forth all the elements, all the living beings. Then, this shows how he is the Prabhu. He is the master of everything. Master means that others are dependent on him. So to be Prabhu in the true sense of the term, he should not be dependent on others in any way. Unless he's fully independent, then he's not the master. He's not the master in the complete sense. So Krishna is the master in the complete sense, and everything and everyone is completely dependent on him. So the next name is given, Bhuta Brit. Brit, this gives the sense of holding or supporting, like Dharana. Dharana. Similar to that, just like there's the name Shankadhari, who holds the conch, but there's also the same meaning, Shankabrit. These are all well-known names in South India. South India ISKCON, if you know the history. So the holder of the conch, similar meaning. So Bhutabrit means he supports or holds everything. This term also, Bhutabrinnacha Bhutasto. This comes in Bhagavad Gita. These two words come together. Bhutabrit Nacha Mamatna Bhuta Bhavanaha. Yeah, that comes. Krishna says how he supports everything, he is in everything, he manifests everything, yet he's independent of everything. So this these terms and their meaning are directly presented by Krishna in Bhagavad Gita. So Krishna is the support of all things. Yeah, so everything rests on Krishna. Srila Prabhupada, in this regard, gives the example of Atlas. Atlas, you know this word, it means like a map of the world. But it comes from a person in Greek mythology who is depicted as a big strong man literally holding the earth on his shoulder. That's how the word Atlas came in English. And it shows a very strong man, but he's bent down by the weight. Which you could imagine, anyone who's bearing a heavy weight, even if they're very strong, it presses them down. However strong a person might be, there's some weight which he can't lift, and some weight which he can lift with difficulty. So to hold everything must be a great strain. That word in English and in Indian language is bhara, means weight, and it also means a burden, it also means like a responsibility or something which presses you. It's pressing, we say a pressing responsibility, it gives the idea of some weight which is pressing down on us. However, it's described about Ananta Shesh that he holds the universe on one of his hoods like having a mustard seed. Now, those of you who have hair, I have a little bit, not much, you can imagine if there's a mustard seed in your hair, how much that will press you down. You won't even notice it. It might stay there for days if you don't comb very carefully. It might stay there for days and you wouldn't even notice it. So Ananta Shesh, he holds the universe on one of his hoods and he doesn't even notice. It's like a mustard seed. So you see the primitive idea of the nature of God is that he's measured in terms that are understandable by human beings. This is actually anthropomorphism. Tamil word for anthropomorphism. The psychological projection of there being a supreme being based on what we understand about human beings. But actually, Krishna is avang manasa gochara. He's not describable by words or understandable by the mind. So what are we doing here? Talking about him and trying to understand him. That's as far as we can understand. Otherwise, there's all Praman in Shastra, authoritative statements. to understand who he is, and he is aprameya, not understandable by any pramana. So again, contradiction. It'll drive the Western logicians crazy. You see, he's the creator of everything, but everything eternally exists. You have to understand him by all praman, but he's not understandable by any praman, or by any means whatsoever. So, long live the contradictions. If we could understand everything about him, then what would be the use of him being God? What would be the meaning of him being God? If he was just something we could capture in between our brain cells. So he bears everything. There's an example given here from there. See, Parashara Bhatta, he gives many references from Shastra. Here's a nice one from. Nice means they're all nice, but I have decided to quote this one. Koshitiki Upanishad. The example. As in a car, the circumference of the wheel is placed on the spokes, the rim of the wheel, and the spokes on the nave, that means the hub. Even so, the subtle elements, the body, rest on the subtle intelligence, the jiva, and the subtle intelligence rests on the prana, which here is translated prana as the paramatma. So there's another example given, just that the he bears everything, just like the example is given. Like, it's a material example. It's an analogy, which helps us to understand. It doesn't completely encompass all the glories of the Supreme Lord, or how he supports everything. But it gives some idea of how the hub of a wheel. On it rest the spokes, on that is the rim, and in a modern car there'll be tires, and then there's the axle, and that's connected above that to the chassis, and then the body of the car, and then everything actually rests on you have a four-wheel car, then it'll be, but everything rests on the hub, so everything is. Everything rests on Krishna. Let's see what Shankara says. Okay. Oh, bhava. Now, the next term is bhava. This is a very big word. The Vishnu Sahasra Nama commentators translate it as existence. He is existence. Bhava means existence. So Krishna is existence. If Krishna didn't exist, which is not impossible, it was not possible to. I mean, it's a highly theoretical statement. Everything rests on Krishna. Everything exists in Krishna. In one sense, everything is Krishna. So, he is existence. For the devotees, there is no existence without Krishna. Without Krishna, everything is it's unimaginable. They cannot exist without Krishna. Therefore, he's called Gopi Paranadhana, or Gopi Pran, Gopi Jivana. He is the life. And we see that when Krishna, at least we're told, he leaves Vrindavan, then everything becomes as if lifeless. Everyone just becomes as if dead. Some kind of motion is there, but the life has gone. Similarly, when Krishna withdraws, when he withdraws from the cosmos, the life, then the pralaya, destruction, everything merges into him and everything becomes as if dead. In the Purusha Sukta and in the Srimad Bhagavatam, it's also described that there is a universal form, all the elements entered, the deities of the elements entered, but it wasn't until the Purush, the Supreme Lord entered, that everything actually came to life. So he is, that's one of the names in Vishnu Sahasranam, also Prana. So many of these names, they're interrelated. He is existence. There is no existence separate from him. There's a nice statement here in Parashara Bhatta's commentary. Like a peacock with its expanded feathers. The beautiful tail of a peacock. He exists possessed of all the riches mentioned already and to be mentioned hereafter. So his existence is not merely just existing. Just like sometimes if you ask people, how are you doing? They say, well, I'm going on. Getting on. I'm just existing. That's all. Nothing in particular to say. I'm just existing. But Krishna's existence is not just existing. Like the Brahmavadis, they think there's only Sat. There's only existence. There's nothing to say about it. Nothing to do in it. Just that's it. Existence. Only existence. But Krishna's existence means lila. He exists for the sake of wondrous pastimes. So that takes place on the basis, the what's that called? The stratum of existence. So that sandhini potency, which manifests and maintains the spiritual world, that is the playground for Krishna's pastimes. So bhava, in Gauriya terminology, this is a very common word, which is generally used not to mean existence per se. It's generally used as again the inadequacy of the English language, the ecstatic feelings, ecstasy, feelings, these terms are used. Bhava. Yeah, so existence. It literally means existing, that which comes into being. But as we find that Najayate Mriyate Vakata Chan, what is that? Nayang Bhutva Bhavita Vana Bhuyaha. It's not that Krishna states about the jiva. That he doesn't come into being, cannot be said to come into being. He's existing, so existing in all phases of time. So bhava means that which come in the material world, it comes into being. In spiritual existence also, it appears like that. It may appear like that. That the day comes into being. After that, the night comes into being. But it's not that there's destruction and dissipation of elements, as in the material. world, but rather the coming into being is simply affected for the variegatedness of Krishna's pleasure. It's not subject to material laws. Just like when Krishna's having a good time at night in the Rasa Lila, he extends it up to the night time of Lord Brahma in length. And you might think, well, everyone else should have died in the time. But no. For Krishna, it becomes the night of Lord Brahma. And as far as the physics of this world are concerned, it goes on as usual. That's Lila Shakti. So, existence, state of being. Bhava means the state of being. In modern Hindi, is that, or Gujarati, it also means the price of something. Well, bhav. It's Gujarati. Yeah? Bhav. Hindi also. Is cheese ka kya bhav hai? I guess for businessmen, that is the bhav. It's, you know, that's what gives it existence. Is the how much money is it worth? That's how they, according to their vision, it's the essence of its being is how much it's worth. Just like gold. Why are people crazy? What's the special thing about gold? You can't eat it. Doesn't produce music. There's no smell. What's the great thing about gold? It looks kind of nice, but brass looks just the same. What's so special about gold? It's bhav. It's price. It's costly. So that's coming. That's not a Sanskrit term. I don't think that's. I mean, it's a Sanskrit term, but among the business community, it's come to mean like that. What is its value? What is its price? So existence, its true condition or state. So this is another meaning of the term bhav. It's just like we have swabhav. Swabhav means one's own condition or state, one's own which means individual condition or state. So swabhav is means each individual person's condition or state, and bhava means it's not just existence, but its state of existence. Becomes a bit difficult to translate. Huh? But there are so many terms which you can use if you know Sanskrit. Then you can. It's just like I saw in the Bhagavad Gita purport. Prabhupada translates, "Buddhi means intelligence." This is in, and then in the Hindi translation it says, "Buddhi ka arth hai buddhi." I have to write and say, change it to say medha or something like this. Or just leave it out because it's already understood. So, the state of existence. Yeah, the whole endeavor of devotees is to understand what is Krishna's bhava. Who is he? I mean, not on what are his feelings? Who is he? And on the basis of that, to enter into relationship with him. Who is he? He's being defined here as the master of all that be. But who is he? Apart from being the master, what does he do? Just like Arjuna asked Krishna, there's stitha pragyasya kha bhasha samadhi stasya keshava stitha dhi king prabhasheta kim asita vrajeta kim. How does a person of fixed intelligence Stita Pragya Sirka. Well, how does he speak? How does he walk? How does he talk? What does he do? So devotees are interested to know that about Krishna. Okay, you want to be a Stita Pragya. You can be, you fix it until you can do so by asking about Krishna. How does he live? How does he exist? What does he do? How does he sit? How does he walk? How does he talk? So, devotees want to know about Krishna, who is non-different from his existence. There's no dichotomy between Krishna and his existence and his nature, as there is in material existence. Material existence is always a dichotomy. There's dichotomy means dvandva. Didn't clear your confusion. Duality. There's birth and there's death. There's happiness and there's distress. There's cold and there's heat. And there's a person and their personality. But people, they're always trying to find the inner baby within. Who am I really? They don't. Again, the hammer or a boot would be helpful for helping you to understand. That's another discussion. We're trying to be Krishna conscious. Who am I actually? And they don't, because people find that, well, I'm conditioned by, you see, I was born and then my parents, they goo-gooed at me, and sometimes they yelled at me, and I have so many impressions which I've picked up from all around, everything I see and do. Who am I actually? I am not simply the sum total of all the impressions that I've picked up in this lifetime, and maybe in, for those who know, in previous lifetimes also. But for Krishna and for his pure devotees, there's no dichotomy between the acquired personality and who they actually are, because they didn't acquire a personality from various material impressions. They are perfectly situated as they are. These people who want to know who they are, tell them, do bhakti, you'll find out. Maybe you'll be a blade of grass. They weren't expecting that, were they? They thought they'd be God. But instead they may be a blade of grass waiting for Krishna to come and place his lotus foot on them. Or for the cows to eat them. Then how do you continue to exist? Better go there and find out if you want to. Don't bring your test tube. It won't work up there. So, in pure spiritual existence, there is no difference between, the person is actually the person, let's put it like that. Whereas a person in material existence, what we consider to be person, is a bunch of material desires which have become conditioned in a certain way to try to enjoy this material world, but is suffering from severe schizophrenia and doesn't know who he actually is and is always has a sense that there's something not quite right. And he's right that there's something not quite right, but he's not fully right, because it's not just something not quite right, there's something seriously wrong in all respects about conditioned consciousness. I was always thinking there's something wrong. You're right. You're right. Everything's wrong. In this material world, everything's wrong. And even everything you think about it is wrong. And even if you start to think how it's wrong, because you have no idea of what's right, even you try to make some solution by trying to find your inner baby or something like that, you just end up making more wrong ideas. So what is the swabhav? This is the real question. What is our real nature? Our real nature, first of all, what is Krishna's real nature? then we can properly understand ourselves. It's another egocentric endeavor to simply, who am I? I'm trying to discover myself, self-realization, and just ignoring the point that we are dependent, to try to find out who we are without understanding the obvious fact that we are dependent in all respects. Then we should try to find out that obviously our existence is it's dictated by factors greater than ourselves. We are dependent. Try to find out what that is, then we can understand ourselves, not independently. It's another madness to try to understand who am I without accepting what should be the obvious fact is that we are totally dependent. So try to find out Atato Brahma Jignasa, that factor on which we are fully dependent. Before that, in the Purva Mimamsa, they say Atato Dharma Jignasa. What is my role in the world? Without understand, first of all, understand the spiritual substratum. Then we can understand what is actual dharma. Trying to understand dharma without understanding Brahma, the spiritual substratum, means we're sure to misunderstand, and therefore we have worldly dharma. So existence. Who is Krishna? How does he exist? What is his true conditional state? Reality. Bhava means reality. Nature, temperament, character, feeling, disposition. These are all different words which can be used for bhava. Now, the Gaudiya words, feeling, that's there, but especially in Gaudiyas it means emotion. Passion. Passion here means not in the material sense, but it means a very strong emotion. And sustained. You see, you may have a strong emotion for a short time, and it goes away. But actual passion is sustained. It's just like someone says, I have a passion for collecting stamps. So it means that you're always thinking how to collect stamps. You're completely absorbed in it, and always thinking about how to get more stamps. And whenever there's any news about the latest philatetical, something like that. Some news. You're very interested, although most of the population is not interested. But you have a passion about stamps, and if you happen to meet anyone else who's got the same stupid passion as you, instead of some other stupid passion, you can talk for hours about it, and you're in bliss about talking about it. So passion means a sustained emotion, not just a briefly lived emotion, but something you're really, really into. It's like really gets you going. Like you can, someone on the TV, on one channel, there's something about soccer. On another channel, there's a nuclear bomb about to be dropped on your head. And then on another channel, there's something about diminishing population of butterflies, and you're not interested in any of them. And then on one channel, someone's talking about stamps. And then you're just completely absorbed. So bhava means is for one who's completely absorbed in bhava for Krishna. He is everything for the devotee. Krishna himself is called Bhava because in other meanings, love, affection, attachment, these are also so Krishna, he's inseparable from Bhava. It's telling that the commentators on Vishnu Sahasranam, they comment, they translate Bhava as existence, which is not incorrect, and according to the sequence, it fits very nicely. But for the devotees of the Gaudiya Vaishnavas, and maybe Pushti Margi also, it's also they're very much concerned with Bhava. So Krishna, he is Bhava, because he's himself, he is always full of Bhav, loving feelings for his devotees. And his existence is inseparable from loving feelings for his devotees. And he is the inspiration for all loving feelings for his devotees. He is the object of loving feelings for his devotees. Bhava also means the purport or meaning. Srila Prabhupada in his commentaries, he would always call it purport, which means to give the meaning. Bhavart. In some commentaries they call it bhavart. Means bhava means meaning, artha also means meaning. So it means to give the meaning. Just like that, not all statements are straightforward. Many of them are not straightforward. Or they have some underlying meaning, which may not be immediately understood by persons who are not privy to the inner meaning. So, just like someone may come to Vrindavan and say, "Where is Krishna?" And someone else will say, "Well, he went to Mathura. When is he coming back?" And the person he's talking to just faints. And what's wrong with him? Just ask him a question, that's all. But he doesn't understand. What is the meaning? What is the underlying purport of all that? Of course, probably the people in Vrindavan couldn't even say that. They couldn't even think of it. So, the meaning exactly, what is the underlying meaning of all this? In Shastra especially, there's so many statements which, just like this one, bhuta brinnacha bhutasto, mamatma bhuta bhavanaha. What is the meaning of all these terms? Krishna says to Arjuna, but it requires, for others, requires explanation. Even Arjuna asks questions, kim tad brahma kim adhyatma, and then Krishna just explains with one word the answer to all these questions, which, and that one word also requires more explanation. Aksharo brahma paramam svabhavo dhyatma mucchate. I mean, because I'm not Arjuna, just to say brahma is akshara doesn't leave me with any more understanding. So then we have to see with the acharyas how they give the bhava, iti bhavaha. Often the commentaries, at the end of the commentary in Sanskrit, on the verse, they'll say, da 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 da, iti bhavaha. This is the bhava, this is the meaning. This is what it's all about. So bhava means meaning, and Krishna is obviously the meaning. Everything without Krishna is meaningless. there's a term, abhava. It means lack of or absence. It's not there, abhava. Buddhi abhava. It never, literally means it never came into being. It was never there. Why is he acting so strangely? Buddhi abhava. Buddhihina. No intelligence. Or abhava. Shortage of. It's commonly used to mean a shortage. So Krishna is bhava. There's nothing lacking in Krishna. He is existence. There's no question of, which means there's no question of non-existence. There's no state of non-existence. As the Shunyavadis would have us believe. Shunyavadi means they give the meaning of everything that there's no existence, therefore there's no meaning. And they have to explain all these things. So how the concept of non-existence has meaning, they have to explain it. If it's meaning, if there's no existence and everything is meaningless, then their explanations are also meaningless. There's no need to explain anyway. So, meaningless. They're all meaningless. To try to logically explain how everything is meaningless is a contradiction in itself. So the name bhava is a kick in the face to those who would say that ultimately everything is abhava. There's no abhava. As Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur would say, there is no shortage of anything in the world except Krishna consciousness. That's the only abhava. That it didn't come. It never happened. What is that? Lochandas. What is that? He sings that. Hinu avatar. Oh, I can't remember. Exactly, it fits with this. I'll remember it afterwards, no doubt. So I'm trying to remember and it won't come because there's abhava in my thinking process. Heno avatar ja rati na janmelo lochan bale she papi elo argelo. Thank you. So whoever's feelings for Nityananda, they didn't janma, they didn't come into being. Lochan says that person who is a sinful person, what sin? He may be a very pious person. What sin did he commit? He didn't have any feelings for Nityananda. And therefore, elo or gelo. He came and he went. That's all you can say about his life. He didn't really, there's nothing to say about his life. Whatever, he may have been a very great performer of so many activities, but his life, he never really was alive. There's nothing really happened. He appeared on the scene and left, that's all. Lived and died. Nothing more to say about it. So love, affection, attachment, all of Krishna is all of these. Love, affection, attachment. The heart of the feelings, or like the essence of all feelings or affection. Or the heart itself. If we say someone's bhava, what does that mean? What is his heart? So that we find that Krishna is a very hearty person. Hearty, this is old English, hearty feelings, feelings from the heart. So that Krishna himself says, actually it's Narayan who says this, the Narayan form. So we should go and preach to all these Sri Vaishnavas and Madhvas and all that. Hey, hey, look, this is what your Narayan is saying. Don't just put him up on a throne and worship him. What does he say? Sadavo hridayang mahyam, sadhu nang hridayang tvaham, madanyate na jananti nahang tebyo managapi. The devotees are my heart. Sadhu here means devotee. It's very clear, because Durvasa was a sadhu. But when Krishna said to, said to Durvasa, the sadhus are my heart, he was telling Durvasa, you're not a sadhu. Otherwise, why, you're not in my heart. He was telling, you're not a sadhu. You think you're a sadhu, but you're not. Ambarish is my heart. And I am his heart, because he doesn't know anything but me, and I don't know anything but him. So this is the heart, this is the bhav of Krishna. Bhav means feeling. What feeling? Just feeling. What is that feeling? There's no impersonal feeling. You have to feel for something or about something or someone. So, of course, these Sri Vaishnavas and Madhvas, they're not devoid of understanding. There's no bhakti whatsoever without feeling, or even they subordinate bhakti to sharanagati. Whereas in our understanding, they're back to front. But for them, they put bhakti first, and then you come up to the stage of sharanagati. But sharanagati means sharan. It's not just putting yourself under someone to be controlled. It's not out of fear. It's affection is implied. Just like a dog takes shelter of a human master, and the dog comes wagging its tail, showing some affection. So that example is given by Yamunacharya. Sanata jivitam. Sanata means with a master, as opposed to anata, without a protector. So it's all about feeling. That's a fact. But there's a lot of philosophy too. Not just, of course it is, feeling. Buddha bhava samanvita. Bhava, this can be here in this context, can be translated also as meditation. They meditated. This generally people translate this as the intelligent people meditate upon me they think of me as the source of all beings. But bhava samandhita, with feeling. That's a better understanding. Not just think, okay, he's great, he's mighty, bow down to him. He's very nice also. Our exemplar is Gopakumar, who was, when he went to Vaikuntha, he was told, behave yourself. Now we're going to bring you to see Narayana, and just behave yourself. We know, you know, you won't even dress properly. You're still dressed in a cowherd, as a cowherd boy. But when you go to see Narayana, you have to bow down and fold your hands and be very respectful. And whatever you do, don't jump forward and try and embrace him like you uncultured cowherd boys always. Of course, the Vaikunthavasis are very cultured, so they told him in a very nice way. So they brought him to see Narayan, and what did he do? He ran forward to embrace him, because that's his swabhava. And he was restrained from doing so. So we should tell the Sri Vaishnavas, it's very nice, you have feelings for the Lord, but that is the essence, not how great he is. Okay, very good. They should go all over the world, teach everyone how great is Narayana, and then when everyone's fully fixed in their consciousness, we'll come and tell them that actually he's dancing with the gopis. Then they'll get all confused, and we'll take it from there. So, the heart, the thing, or the substance, these are all similar terms. Krishna is the bhava, he's the substance of everything. Also synonymous with the world, the universe. Uh, advice, instruction, contemplation, meditation. Yeah, so these are different terms. Okay. Watch the time. Are we done? And 9:30. Shall I finish? It's another 995 names to go. But I think to give proper bhava to the next term, I may also need quite a long time. Artha, yeah. So, I may stop here then. Oh, actually. Oh. Yeah. I can do it briefly, but what's the fun? There's no bhava in doing it briefly. I see. But then you'll want line by line translation, isn't it? How are the translators surviving? What is your bhava? Yeah, but we might go through right to 11:30 also. No, I'm saying now, if we start these two names, we might go through to 11:30 also. That's also possible. Bhutatma is the next name. So I finished on bhava? Yeah, no, there's no finish. But let's move on anyway. Bhutatma, the life or the soul of all beings. He is the Bhuta can be a synonym of Atma. So Atma, they can be very similar words. So, Atma can mean just like that, the prana, just like that which gives life to, that which is the life of, that which is the essence of, that which is the being of. Just like one of Krishna's names is Vishvatma, Vishvatma. He is the life of the universe. He is the living principle within the universe. So Krishna, although the Atma, another synonym for Atma is Jiva. The Atma is Jiva Bhuta. Jiva Bhuta means living being. As compared to Sthula Bhuta, or non-gross, non-living being. So, what is the life? What is that? Jiva Sajin. What is that in Bhagavad Gita says? And the living, I'm the life of all living beings. Jivo Jiva Sajivanam. Yeah. Krishna says, I am the life of all living beings. So, this point to understand, again, it's very difficult for us to understand because of our dualistic way of thinking. Whereas we should think in this context, we should think not in terms of dvaita, but in terms of advaita. Oh, wait a minute. No one shot me. You should have shot me. Anyone who says we should think not in terms of dvaita, but in terms of advaita, you should... No, actually not sure. You're supposed to kick them in the face with a boot, right? Right, okay. Let's get back to the proper Siddhanta here. Or the proper bhava of our sampradaya. But actually in some senses it's one should, this is why there's a chintya bheda bheda understanding. Because one should see two-ness when it should be seen and oneness when it should be seen. And failure to see two-ness when oneness should be seen is a fault. And failure to see oneness, wait a minute, failure to see two-ness when oneness should be seen, that's also a fault. So just like if we think that there's more than one ultimate being, there's more than one controller, or God has a competitor like Satan. This is a duality has been introduced, which is not possible. Krishna is Advaita. That means there's no other of the same category. Jiva is many. Bhagavan is one. So to see two-ness or multiplicity where there is oneness is a mistake. So we are Advaitavadis. We accept there's only one, and that one is Krishna. But Krishna means he exists non-differently from, but also differently from all else that exists. How is that? He's Bhutatma. He is the life of all that lives. And at the same time, he's separate. Each living being has their own individual existence, but not exactly. They're called, jiva. There's the jivas. They're called vibhinangsha. There's svangsha and vibhinangsha. Svangsha of Krishna means his kala, again, it's very difficult to say in English, but they're called expansions or plenary portions. So they are directly Vishnu tattva. There's also Vibhinangsha, which is the jiva. Vibhinna means quite different or quite separate. But this term should be understood. They're not wholly separate. There's no question of them being totally separate. Because they're totally dependent upon Krishna. Means that in quantity, in terms of their ability to manifest any power or to have any opulence, the jivas are quite different from that of the Supreme Lord. But they are not, in quality, they are not different. They're not separable from the Supreme Lord. He is the life of all that lives. So we have life because his nature is to be alive. He is living. And when, again, that example of the Purusha entering the universe, when he enters, everything comes to life. When he withdraws everything, everything rests in his body as if lifeless. Not exactly lifeless, but in a sedentary state, or just as if lifeless. So he is the life of all living beings. Of course, this fits with the Sri Vaishnava, Sharir Shariri Bhav, that they give the example of the the body is lifeless and the soul enters into it, and the soul controls and directs the activities of the body. In the same way, the Supreme Lord enters and controls and directs the individual living beings also. So Krishna is jivo jivasya jivanam. He is the life of all that lives. And again, in respect to the devotees, without Krishna, they feel as if there's no life. Life means to live with Krishna. Life has no meaning. If Krishna leaves, then there's no... practically life stops. There's no meaning to life. There is no life. Why do we get up in the morning? Why do we perform our activities? Because there is meaning. There's some meaning, bhav. There's either the real meaning, which is Krishna, or there's some imagined meaning. But that's what gives us life. Why does a man work hard to maintain his family? Because that family that gives him a sense of meaning. This is what I do. That I am defined in relation to the family. Therefore, I have to work for all this. But that the real meaning is Krishna. Devotees rise early in the morning for service to Krishna. We have to serve Krishna. Others, they're performing activities without a sense of Krishna consciousness. They are like zombies. They're acting and as if there's some meaning, but there is actually abhava. There is lack of real meaning. There's no Krishna consciousness. So it's all meaningless. It's all the activities of non-devotees are like offering ghee into a fire that's already extinguished, into ashes. It's all meaningless. So Krishna is the life of all that lives. The very fact that we can do anything is only because Krishna gives us life. He gives us the matasmriti gyanam apohanam cha. From him comes the inspiration to work for that which is not worth working for, because we think it has meaning. And when Krishna withdraws, the life is in the body, and when the time is up under the laws of nature given by Krishna, then it's all over. The same bhutas are there, the same elements of the body are there. The body remains as it was, but when the life is withdrawn, then the body is said to be dead. So it's Krishna who gives life. If there's life, we understand this is the same, Krishna. And where is there not life? Everywhere there is life. So that means Krishna. Let's see what Shankara says about this. The essence of all beings, the antaryami. Yeah. That idea is there also, or not, that understanding is there. That every living being is accompanied in this material world by the Paramatma, who is known as Antaryami. Actually, this term Paramatma is more or less synonymous with Bhagavan. In Gaurīya Vaiṣṇava theology, it's and according to the Bhagavatam verse, this Vedanti Tattvavizas Tattvam Yajjnanam Advayam Brahmeti Paramatmeti Bhagavaniti Shabhyate. It's understood, it's to mean, or it's often given as synonymous with the Antaryami, which means he who dwells within. So that's a big question in the Sri Vaishnava Sampradaya. Does it mean he's inside the soul or just inside the heart along with the soul? And that's worth splitting a whole Sampradaya about. One of the questions. their sampradaya is split on. So he is the indweller. He lives within everyone's heart, and heart can here be understood to mean the physical area of the heart and also the soul. He's within the soul also, although the soul is indivisible. But he's intimately connected, inseparable. Therefore, inseparable from the soul. Therefore, a real sadhu is one who understands that sadhu nam hridayam tvaham, the real heart of every living being is Krishna. He gives life. Life means to serve him. He is life. Life should be only for serving him. Everything. So we should get in touch with what's in the core of our heart. Try to understand what is in the core of our heart. What is our real inner desire. And if we look, we'll find Krishna. If we look in the right way. We have to be directed how to look. We're in a maze of confusion with all kinds of different people standing up and saying, whoa, do this, do that. The real truth, ekanka, the real truth is we're all God. There is no God. Nothing's real. So many people are giving direct. This. Yeah. So if we get someone who can direct us through the maze, we'll find our way through all the confusion of this material world. And yes, make a journey to the center of your heart, and there you'll find Krishna. So Krishna is the bhutatma. He's the living being within all living beings. Yet he's not, remember, he's also Vishva. He's also the whole universe. So it's not that he's just localized or very small, but he's also very great. So all these points have to be understood about Krishna. He's also Bhuta Bhavana. Bhuta Bhavana means he who nourishes all beings. He who brings them into existence. Bhuta means that which is in existence. Didn't say that before. I should have said that before. Bhuta Bhavana means he who brings them into existence. Or he who nourishes them. He's later on in Vishnu Sahasranam we'll find also Pushta. One of his names is Pushta, which means he who nourishes. So this is or he who himself is nourished. So he nourishes all living, or he brings into being. So again, this can be understood in so many different ways. Practically, the jivas in this material world, although they are living, they have activity, they're doing all kinds, they appear to be living, but they are like ghosts. They're really bhutas. They're living in it, but their life, because they are abhava, they have no real meaning to their life. Or their bhava, the meaning of their life is not the real meaning. So again, they're abhava. They miss the point. So Krishna brings the living beings actually into existence. Otherwise, this whole universe, Achaitanyam idam vishvam. It's the whole universe is full of living beings who are as if dead. They don't have actual life. So Krishna Chaitanya comes and gives the whole universe life, gives it and nourishes. Just like someone who's been starving for some time. Yesterday evening, I was feeling somewhat weak because I hadn't been eating properly for the last 2-3 days and due to digestive problems. So the body was not getting nourished and I was feeling weak. So similarly, someone who's not nourished by that which actually gives life, which means Krishna consciousness. It's like we're all living in this world, but just hardly our life, it's not really a life, all, it's just almost dead. Because everyone in this universe is as if dead. And Krishna comes through his devotees also and gives life. Just like that, the trees in Vrindavan had become lifeless in the area of the Kaliya Hrad due to the poisonous fumes emanating from the mouth of Kaliya, and the poison just emanated throughout the whole water. So when they drank that, they became dead. But then Garuda dropped a drop of nectar on one of the trees, which brought it back to life again. So we're like poisoned by the poison of envy for Krishna, which Kaliya was vomiting through his mouths. But a little drop of mercy from the pure devotee, and again life comes. And that, what is that life for? That tree was nourished into life so that when the time came, Krishna would jump on that tree. Krishna would climb on that tree for service to Krishna. Krishna jumped on that tree and he climbed up the tree and jumped into the water to punish Kaliya for his sin of causing pollution and spoiling the atmosphere all around, spoiling the atmosphere of Vrindavan. So, the pure devotees, they sprinkle nectar and they bring to life. That means they bring to Krishna. They nourish our actual existence, which is Krishna consciousness. So that we can flourish for the sake of serving Krishna. That's why we should have very nice temples, very nice prasadam, all facilities to give the possibility, to make facility so that everyone who comes can serve Krishna, to nourish Krishna consciousness. The sake of the temple is not to nourish our material desires. It is not a place for simply for eating and sleeping. It is a place for eating and sleeping, but not solely for eating and sleeping. But it is a place where everyone can serve Krishna fully. And in this, the nourishment of the body is only meant because the body is meant for serving Krishna. So that is the real nourishment of the living being by which we do not die. We can nourish this body, but the body will die, however nicely it's fed. And there's nothing any doctor can do. By giving even the best food, still you have to die. But if we get the nourishment, that is Krishna, then we live forever in Krishna consciousness. Now Krishna is the Bhutatma. He nourishes all living beings. Bhuta Bhavana. Their names are very similar. Bhutatma, Bhuta Bhavana. They have similar meanings, but slightly different nuances. So Bhuta Bhavana. Krishna also nourishes the desires of non-devotees. Want to be a non-devotee? Madhasmitya Gyanam Apohanam Cha. Krishna gives the knowledge by which one will not be Krishna conscious also. What is that? Yepi anyadevata bhakta yajante shraddha anvita tepi mamet. No, that's the wrong verse. What's that? Achala shraddha, usually. That yo yang yang tanung bhakta shraddha ajita michati tasya achalang shraddham tameva viditami aham. If one wants to worship anyone except me, Krishna says, which is the wrong thing to do, Krishna says, I give to that person the immovable faith by which they become fixed. He nourishes the faith by which we can forget him also. So even that, he nourishes whatever you want. Krishna's kalpa vriksha. You want to forget Krishna? Krishna will nourish. But the point is that because it's a material desire, then like a material tree, it will flourish for some time and then wither. That is the nature of this material world. Whereas if we develop the lata, the creeper of devotional service, which grows around the kalpa vriksha, that is pure devotional service, eternally existing. Another example is given, that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu himself is the tree of devotional service. So if our bhakti lata grows up around that, then that will be nourished and supported and protected by Krishna, who is bhuta bhavana. And that will eventually, then the creeper will eventually bear fruit of love of Krishna, having been nourished. The nourishment is at the root. However high the tree, the creeper goes up towards Golok Vrindavan, the nourishment is at the root. And the root is the water of hearing and chanting about Krishna. So in this way, how he is the creator, sustainer, director, protector, and the very life of all living beings. And in this way, he is the master. Bhuta Bhavya Bhavat Prabhu is established in the first verse of Sri Vishnu Sahasranama. Hare Krishna. I'll finish there. All right, Hare Krishna, please go and get nourished by taking Krishna Prasadam and get nourishment for the body so that it can serve Krishna and nourishment for the soul. Krishna is Prasada, so you will be nourished in all respects by taking Krishna Prasadam. Hare Krishna. What's that? It's actually not possible. Because you can't reciprocate with such a...